deflected her question with one of my own. "I'm trying to establish good relations between our clans. Would you have some pity on a girl already and give me a chance to solve the riddles? I'm not asking for the chess pieces. The riddles will be enough for me." "Hold on. I still don't get why this performance, all this drama with leaving Phoenix, was required. We could have just sat down and had a chat. But no, you felt you had to put on a show." "Not everything that I do happens on your account," smiled the girl. "What I did, it was something I needed to do. It was personal and has nothing to do with you."
"It looks like it already does. At the very least, the waiter has already seen that you're no longer in Phoenix, and because for everyone you are an ideal, an icon. All in all, this could affect me as well, especially when your admirers find out about it."
"Some ideal," smiled Anastaria. "Thanks for the compliments. Of course, it's always nice to receive them, especially from someone who is doing all he can to resist my womanly charms."
The girl smiled once again.
"But it's a pity you see me in this way. In truth, appearance is only a mask. What's inside a person is much more important. This is why I decided not to take part in the beauty contest this year. I've had enough of it. All these envious stares from other girls, the persistence of the men who try to find me in reality. They offer to shower me in riches if I agree to be theirs. It's all a bit too much, really. Although I'm already 28, I still haven't managed to find a worthy companion. But enough about sad things. I have a request. Please don't divulge what I've just told you. There are many rumors circulating about it, starting from me supposedly being a cold-hearted bitch and ending with polyandry being my true preference. So it's not as if another rumor would make much of a difference, but if you don't mind, please forget what I've just told you."
"It's already forgotten. As far as your love for riddles is concerned, I have something for you. Here's the description. Perhaps you'll like it." I wrote down the formulas from the orcs and passed them to Anastaria. "Let her have some fun, and I'll have a chance to find out how long it takes her to find the answer."
"The Pythagoras theorem, the Fibonacci sequence, and the formula for volume?"
Anastaria became immersed in thought as she examined the formula descriptions.
"Two multipliers, one equals sign, and seven numbers after the dot? What is this?"
"An equation. You have to solve it."
"There isn't a solution here. These formulas have no meaning."
"You disappoint me. A solution exists, and it's the only one possible. Find it." The next morning, I headed for the Jolly Gnome Tavern. It was unclear why it was called Gnome instead of Gnome. The tavern was run by an NPC, so the name was the prerogative of the developers. Which of them came up with the idea, or perhaps made a typo, remains shrouded in mystery. As I occupied a table and ordered some food providing plus 10% intellect for 24 hours, I was still unable to quite recover from Anastaria's maneuver yesterday. What did she want to say by leaving Phoenix? Why did she join me? I had a gut feeling that this wouldn't end with the explanation that I was given, and I had no idea which direction to dig in to get at the truth. I just didn't have enough information to hand.
"Hey there, 67th.
A familiar voice sounded next to me, bringing a smile to my face.
"Where'd you manage to level up like this?"
25 level Eric 20-level Klutzer and 19-level Leidy were standing in front of me. Judging by their levels, these guys had kept themselves busy in the past 3 months. If not for the Beatwick battle, they would have been well ahead of me in leveling up. Well done to them, all in all. From the way the group was standing, it looked like they'd chosen a leader, Eric. Klutzer and Leidy were standing a little behind him, as if giving room to the one in charge. Or, which is just as likely, I was overthinking things, and they ended up standing like this by accident. Or perhaps it's a habit from having the tank stand at the front, or... Why am I sitting here lost in thought instead of greeting the guys properly? Am I glad to see you? I jumped up and gave each of them a hearty handshake. Whatever turn our subsequent conversation might take, I really was happy to see them. It mattered little that we'd only played together for a week and then spent the next 3 months at different ends of Malabar. "Sit down! Why are you standing there like lemons?" I pointed towards my table.
"No prisoner headband and the gear, judging by its appearance, is of a rare quality at the least. 67 levels in 3 months, and the 10,000 that you sent us," said Klutzer, using normal speech, in the sense that it didn't contain a word of his usual slang. "Are you still a prisoner, or have you already been released?"
"No, I'm still in a capsule, like the rest of you." His question was pretty understandable. In the past 3 months, they had had a chance to get to know each other, get used to each other, and find common ground. And now it was time to accept someone else into their small group, someone they had been acquainted with, but hadn't seen in a good while. Moreover, this acquaintance looked very different to them now. "I've been through so many misadventures in the last 3 months. You get what you see right now. But I haven't stopped being the person who you got to know at the mine. Guys, come off it already. Have a seat." Leidy looked at Klutzer, and Eric turned as well, while I mentally conceded a point to Anastaria. She was right that Klutzer's brains had ensured that he would become the leader amongst these three. It certainly wasn't Eric.
"It won't hurt to talk, I guess," he concluded. "Let's see what tune Mayan's gonna sing us."
No, he still did drop into slang from time to time. "Well, then, let's make it clear that I can do some analyzing as well. Klutzer, tell us where you're from. From the way you were speaking at the mine, gangster lingo is your native language. Yet you're quite capable of speaking normally so that everyone can understand you. Where did you learn to speak like this?"
"Everyone talks like that where I'm from. I picked it up as well, so as not to stand out."
A smile flashed across Klutzer's face for the first time.
"Reading is not too popular with my homies, but everything else. So tell us what happened to you, and how you lost the headband, especially the latter. For us, that's the main sticking point."
"The sticking point?" I asked.
"The PKers have really gotten to us," Eric spoke for the first time. "When we refused to join Phoenix, we became the targets of organized hunts, either by Phoenix members or some other idiots. You can't get away from the fact that as soon as we would try to leave the gates, the PKers would be waiting for us. We only managed to leave town properly a couple of times, and we're only able to gain a couple of levels at best. The rest of the leveling took place in town, with assignments, socializing, and delivery quests, and all under the close watch of bounty-hunting enthusiasts. As soon as it rained, we were immediately sent for respawn if we happened to be outside a safe zone. At the same time, we were constantly bombarded with offers to join Phoenix or to join the Dark Legion."
"Eric is right," Klutzer took up the conversation. "We were expecting a beginner,
20-level shaman, but now you're sitting here in front of us with your 67 levels, excellent gear, without the red headband, and already a member of a clan. Have you forgotten that we intended to make a clan together? Or has that totally slipped your mind?
I see. Right about the clan. Yes, I am in a clan. But I am its only member since I created this clan last night to save time doing it today. I created the clan for us.
Sea thistles? Chuckled Leidy. You've got to be kidding, right?
On the contrary. If you hate the name, it can be changed. I picked the first that wasn't downright terrible. The other names on offer, like We Love Barleona, We Play Barleona, and Dark-Eyed Cows of the West, didn't quite fit. I mentally gave myself extra points when all three of them chuckled. So, they're beginning to thaw. Good. So you don't need to worry about the clan. I was never going to ditch anyone. Moving on to the headband, how much do you need to take yours off?
For me, it's 100,000. What about you?
Said Eric, and looked at Leidy and Klutzer.
220, threw in Klutzer. 150, said Leidy after a pause. Why do you ask?
I call upon a herald. I require your assistance, I said, in place of a reply.
You called me and I came. If your summons was a false one, you will be punished.
The herald uttered the standard phrase as soon as he stepped out of the portal. The three Red Riding Hoods froze. Little surprise there. It was their first meeting with a herald in the game.
I would like to make a payment in order for these free citizens to be able to remove their red headbands. Please deduct the money from my account.
A window opened before my eyes, asking me to confirm the deduction of the required amount. I chased the greed toad into some distant corner and pressed the yes button. Unlike the wait following Nurus's payment, the red headbands vanished from the heads of the three convicts almost instantaneously.
Can I be of any further help?
No, thank you. We can take it from here, I said and turned to the guys. Listen, if it bothers you that I created the clan without you, you have my sincere apologies. I arrived in Anhurs yesterday, sent you messages, and created the clan to save time later. If you don't like the name, suggest another one. We'll talk about it, and if it's free, change it.
Thanks for the headband, of course, said Klutzer. But can you tell me one thing? Where did all this gold come from? You just made a generous gesture and shelled out 470,000 gold. 3 months ago, you had nowhere near as much money. What's with the ostentatious habits you seem to have picked up in the meantime? I want to know everything before I tie the rest of my game life to you, from A to Z. Otherwise, what do we need a clan for, if it will be you constantly rubbing shoulders with those at the top and us doing all the grinding while picking up crumbs that fall from the table? We can do that in any clan.
Catch and sign the non-disclosure agreements. I opened the list of standard agreement forms, which included the non-disclosure agreement, changed a couple of points, entered the players' names, and handed them to the three men. It's time to start playing by the rules, and not by the code of the underworld, I pointed out, seeing Eric's glum face. Now listen to what's been happening to me all this time, I began, as soon as all three agreements were signed. I will start from the very beginning, the Prike Mine and Kamiamia. I told them about everything, the creation of the Kamiamia, the Orc Warrior figurines, which they immediately asked me to show them, the crafting skill, the first kill, Beatwick, the totem, dragons, the cursed chess pieces, the priestesses of Iluna, the map of Cartus and its sail,
Anastari and her presence in the clan, and the treasures of the dragons. I kept nothing back, even telling them about the dress of Lyra. When I told them about the totem, I had to activate the standard invisibility barrier that was available in this tavern so I could show them Draco, because the guys had trouble believing it otherwise. I didn't think that it would take me quite so long to retell 6 months of my life spent in the game, and I was also surprised by just how eventful this time had been. And that's how I became such a brash big shot throwing money around, I concluded, having revealed all. Now you know what happened to me. My current appearance doesn't make me any better or worse than you. I'm the same. I just got lucky in opening up the Cardus scenario and striking it big, as they say. Stopping is completely out of the question right now. You have to keep it up, or your luck will run out and it's back to the everyday grind. Catch the description of the High Priestess quest. I shared Beth's assignment with the others. We'll have to set out towards the Freelands for the search as soon as possible. We need some more people, but I have 3 reliable guys with whom I've spent enough time adventuring in my day. So, are you in?
Why didn't you join Phoenix?
Klutzer was still trying to get to the bottom of things.
When Rasta, Phoenix's chief recruiter, found us, he spun the tale of how Mayan was already in the clan and couldn't wait to see us there as well. We even went through some tests necessary for being accepted into Phoenix, but then decided to wait a bit before joining.
That's why I didn't join. Hellfire, you probably know who that is, told me exactly the same thing, that you guys were already in Phoenix and were just waiting for me to join. I was pretty upset with you at the time. If Anastaria hadn't made the slip-up that I mentioned, I may have even bought it. To be more precise, I'm a shaman and function on the level of intuition, so my instincts tell me that I must avoid joining other clans at all costs. I know it sounds stupid, but in 3 months my instincts have brought me all that you can see right now, so I try my best to follow them. And why did you decide not to join if they were trying so hard to recruit you?
We're no deserters, and don't go back on our words.
Klutzer's face relaxed.
Other clans invited us only on account of the first kill, but they didn't really need us otherwise. Protection from PKers? That's a bit of a joke. Besides, even more would have ended up hunting us if we joined Phoenix of Legion. There was little point joining a smaller clan, and we simply lacked the gold to create our own.
Klutzer turned to the others and asked,
Has Mayan passed the test? Are we with him, or do we part ways?
He passed, said Eric. No tricks, and he's not sticking up his nose at us. He seems to be the same as he was 3 months ago. The clan gets my vote. Leidy?
Mine too. I thought at first the bastard came to have a laugh at us, but I see that I was wrong. I'm in.
Then send us the invite, concluded Klutzer. Have you already decided who will be what?
Yes, if there are no objections, I will remain the head. I've picked up a good number of quests, and as the head, they'll spread to the rest of the clan through me. Plus, I have money bags. Take a look at the description, which is another big bonus for the clan. Klutzer will be my deputy. What do you say? I selected each of the players and sent them an invite.
Well, I won't be the deputy.
Klutzer declined my invite.
Perhaps Eric would take it, but I won't do it. Make me an ordinary fighter.
Why? I asked, surprised.
It's just not my thing. Thinking stuff up, figuring out a way to get in somewhere, I'm your man. But I don't want to be in the limelight all the time.
I won't do it either, said Eric. Becoming a deputy after Anastaria is just too risky. What if she decided to come back and the place was already taken? No, I'll pass.
All right, then, I said, once Sea Thistle's clan sported three extra players. Guys, you probably know each other quite well by now. Can you tell me what you're doing time for?
Tell us about yourself first.
I'm here for hacking. I briefly told them about the bet with Marina and the hacking of the intellect imitator and looked at the others. What about you?
Hacking? Eric spoke first. I hacked an imitator of this shop and was siphoning money off them.
If my memory doesn't fail me, Klutzer's here for theft, right? I asked. 220 gold for the headband equates to a 22 million debt. What on earth did you steal? I asked, surprised.
Have you heard of a painting called the Mona Lisa?
That, smiled Klutzer.
Although, I had no time to carry it out before the police arrived. Later, they spent a long time questioning me about how I got inside. I told them, so I ended up with a 7-year sentence instead of a 15-year one.
I'm here for bribery, said Leidy. I was working in the district administration office. Usually everything was fine, but one time things just didn't work out. It was my fault, and I had to take the rap.
Then this is what I propose we do with our clan. I know you probably have ideas of your own, but hear me out first. Let's see. I glanced at the clan properties and was disappointed to see that the bonuses for the first kill didn't stack. It turned out that just one person with such a buff was enough to get all the goodies. All of us have to level up in our professions. The clan will focus on producing and selling items made with the crafting skill. We will have to find a reliable free person who doesn't have the 30% convict tax deduction to deal with the sales. As I said before, I already have three old acquaintances in my sights. I'll try to take them with me to the freelands and see if they've changed much in the last 6 months. If they haven't, one of them can easily be made into the treasurer. These guys are reliable. They won't let us down. Each of us has different terms to serve, so the aim of the clan for the next 4 to 8 years, however long each sentence is, to earn money and secure a comfortable existence after release. In the time we're spending in the capsules, the world isn't standing still, so we will find it very hard to return to our previous occupations. I don't want to end up unemployed after Barleona, and neither do you, I suspect. So, all in all, that's the plan for now. If there are no objections, our task for today is... As it turned out, Klutzer's ideas were running along the same lines, so after providing everyone with the necessary cash, I first sent them all to the bank to buy themselves a new purse and a mailbox, and then visit the profession trainers and unlock the maximum number of both gathering and production professions. When the guys left, I closed my eyes and tried to relax.
Right.
These were some tough negotiations. It's not that I expected them to run at me with open arms, but I didn't expect this either. But that's fine. We'll make it work. And then suddenly I jumped up like one hit by lightning. The princess! I promised to visit her yesterday, but never found the time. Or, to put it more bluntly, I forgot. I had to go to the palace straight away before I landed in any extra trouble.
You weren't in a great hurry.
It looked like Tisha's imitator had finally come into its own as a high-born lady. Before I could meet the princess, I had to explain to a flamboyant-looking gentleman in a long blue jacket, a butler or a steward, who knows with these palace NPCs, why I needed to meet the Emperor's daughter.
"Tisha, 1,000 apologies.
It was my first day in Annhurst yesterday, and by the time I got on top of all my errands, it was night already. Who would have let me in to see you at night? So that's why I came today, first thing, as soon as the palace gates were open. My level of attractiveness with her was still at 39 points, which was comforting. At least the princess hadn't taken offense.
"Sea thistle," smiled Tisha as she examined my symbol. "A lovely wild flower. In Beatwick, I often picked flowers like these and put them around the house. A little piece of sky can look very beautiful in your hands. I like that. What are you planning to do in the near future?"
"Today or tomorrow I'll be heading out to the Freelands on an assignment that Beth gave me. It should take about a month. After that, I'm free. Do you need help with anything?" As soon as the princess uttered the words, "I like that," I immediately looked at my attractiveness. 42 points. Wow! So there are some advantages in a floral name and a blue emblem. Getting +3 to attractiveness just on account of a name is very nice. Now I had to see if I could get Tisha to give me a quest.
"Yes, but it's not for me. It's for Slate."
"The prince?"
"He's no prince. Father cannot allow some lowly werebeast to become his daughter's husband, so we need your help. Slatey needs the blessing of his parents to marry a vagrant. For that, he has to travel to the very center of Malabar, almost to the Cartus border, but Father has no intention of giving him an escort. My future husband has to make it to his family on his own or with friends, and he doesn't have any. We are forbidden from hiring a paid escort. The heralds are keeping a close watch over that. Mahan, we need your help. Quest available. Escorting the prince. Quest type, scenario. Requirements, reputation with the Malabar Empire. Respect increase. Attractiveness with the princess, +40. Reward, none. Penalty for failing or refusing the quest, none. Time limit for completing the quest, 3 months.
There was no reward or penalty, but on the other hand, this was a scenario. As Beatwick had shown, you had to grab quests like these with both hands. "Princess, I will help the future prince, but after I carry out the task that the High Priestess gave me. I promised Beth I will get the stone back, so it wouldn't be fair of me to let her down."
"I understand," said Tisha, visibly saddened. "We can't even see each other until he has a proper title. Father sent him to the far reaches of the palace, which I haven't explored properly yet. We tried to arrange a meeting via an amulet, but the heralds blocked all the doors. Everyone is against me here." The girl sobbed.
"What if Slate comes with us to the Freelands, and then from there we'll head straight to his parents?" I ventured, keeping my fingers crossed. Beth's description didn't state that the quest could only be undertaken by players. This meant that we could easily hire NPCs for it. It might be expensive, but was still quite possible. And here was an opportunity to get a decent werebeast for free, a future prince, no less, and even level up in attractiveness with him. "What if we come across something that will help your Slate to gain the blessing of his parents?"
"Hold on, I'll ask him."
The expression of renewed hope reappeared on Tisha's face. She took out the communication amulet and briefly explained the situation to her werebeast. I had to intervene and open the quest description for Tisha, which she then read out to Slate, and after a few minutes of questions and answers, the party heading out to the Freelands had grown in number, having enlisted a level 128 werebeast into its ranks. "We'll meet by the palace's main gates in 5 minutes," I instructed the new member of my group. and decide what to do next there. Princess, would you mind accompanying me to the exit? I politely offered my arm to Tisha. The palace is so new that I'm afraid of getting lost. The joy on the princess's face when she saw Slate and ran towards him resulted in +5 points of attractiveness with her. The heralds that turned up could only watch in silence as the young couple embraced. They had the power to block their planned meetings, but stopping one already in progress was beyond them.
"You have to be more careful," I heard the girl's admonition as I left the palace.
I felt a bit sorry for the bear man. The Lady Vagrin won't get off his back until she drills every health and safety rule into him. I decided not to interrupt the reunited lovers. In an hour, I would contact Slate once again and arrange another meeting. So, in the meantime, I sped off towards the main square. I had received a letter from Millennium saying that he was ready to meet me right away. Illenium, Duki, and Tsuchiho were glad to see me, but I had to tell my story to each of them, read the commiseration in their eyes, and assure them that there was nothing they could do, that I was perfectly fine, and that I don't have any next of kin that are in need of help. All three of them agreed to take part in the quest, warning me right away that they could only be online between 6 in the evening and 2 in the morning, game time. Far from ideal, but this couldn't be helped. Work and family were sacrosanct. The level numbers looked as follows. Illenium, 118. Duki, 122. Tsuchiho, 127. Taking Slate into account, the total level came to 622, so the conditions of the High Priestess had been met. We agreed to meet at 6 in the evening by the Temple of Iluna. I formed a group, met with the future prince, described the situation to him, and headed for the place that I'd wanted to visit for a while, but had little chance to until now. The dating house.
"Biological age verified," came the voice of the imitator responsible for admittance as soon as I stepped through the arch of the dating house. "Limitations detected. No more than 24 hours a week. Time still available? 24 hours. You may enter. Welcome."
I found myself in a small room, piled high with plush cushions and a single sofa on which a beautiful lady NPC was sitting and leafing through a magazine. Nothing had changed since my last visit. My sight still goes slightly blurry. The NPC still stays quiet until you speak to her or until 10 minutes goes by from the moment you enter the room. No pressure of any kind or any prickly comments. The room was generated individually for each player. The corporation did everything to make sure that players didn't feel ill at ease. The task of the NPC placed in the room included providing advice on choosing the player's object of desire, or, if the imitator managed to correctly assess the player's tastes, manifest the direct embodiment of their preferences. I had another look at the girl. She was a human, quite cute, but not tawdry, with a slightly upturned nose, bright blue eyes, which I saw when she shot me a glance, and luscious white hair. Why on earth had the system suddenly decided that I like blondes?
"Pretty lady, would you help me choose a girl?"
I finally ventured to make the request.
"Of course. Have a look at what we've got."
Several 3D holograms of elves, humans, gnomes, and other representatives of Barleona's females appeared before my eyes.
"Choose a race."
"I think I've already chosen," I said, and smiled at the NPC girl sitting in front of me. The longer I spent looking at her, the more I liked her. The imitator had guessed correctly.
"You are magnificent, and I wouldn't change a thing." "Thank you."
The blonde girl blushed, and a message flashed in front of me asking whether I was prepared to pay for the dating house services worth 2,500 gold an hour. Nice prices they have here, I chuckled. Very democratic. Still, I pressed the yes button and embarked into a fantasy land of my own. The allowance of 24 hours per week needed to be utilized. 3 hours had gone by before the dating house released me from the spell. I didn't think that my lengthy abstinence would have led to such an explosion of energy, but it would seem that my desire for intimacy had reached its peak. Right now, I was walking aimlessly along Anhur's streets, killing time before the meeting by the temple and enjoying the sights of the city. Anhur's is almost the only place in the game not built following a template. Each house was custom-made, and a separate design company was responsible for each street, every one of which they tried to make into something exceptional. I had no idea why it was necessary, but it made the place a wonder to behold. I would close my eyes and completely immerse myself in my surroundings as I cruised on autopilot along the streets that I had run around for 2 years before my prison sentence. When I was a hunter, I had usually tried not to depart too far away from the capital, which was the scene of the most interesting happenings, and which I knew like the back of my hand. Without a thought that I would get lost or become a victim of PKers, the weather was great and the city was a safe zone, I found myself next to a painfully familiar place, the Rogue Training Grounds. Subdued shouts from players doing various agility exercises, their happy exclamations when they got something right, and bursts of laughter from the crowd when someone fell down, this place brought back so many memories. My heart missed a beat. A lump came to my throat, and I turned and entered the training grounds. At one time, I spent at least 2 months teaching myself to complete the first stage of the obstacle course, so I felt completely at home in these training grounds. Since I ended up in this area, why not try to go through the course as a shaman? Let's see if my body still remembers the movements that I'd honed for such a long time.
"Look, what do we have here?" said an unpleasant and jarring male voice. "There's a shaman on the course. Everyone stealth now. Ha ha ha!"
I managed to find the source of this mocking voice in the crowd of rogues preparing to go through the obstacle course. He presented a standard image of a hero with a square jaw, a pack of muscles. Why would a rogue need muscles? And a billowing cape. This was no player, but some comic superhero. I didn't even bother reading his name, since I immediately lost any interest in this person. Using an auto-generated game avatar wasn't forbidden, but it was considered bad taste amongst most players. Why choose a template when you could run around as yourself? A word about the obstacle course. The main stat for rogues is agility, so that's what they level up in first. It can be increased not only with marksmanship exercises, but also by overcoming various obstacles. If you jump over a log, you get plus 4% agility. If you jump over 2, that would already be plus 5, and so on. The rogue training area was stuffed full of various devices, but the crown was the main obstacle course. It was an enormous stretch of ground, about 500 meters long, peppered all over the place with swinging blade pendulums, flame jets, hanging chains, and other features that made progress through it a rather complicated affair. Hunters often came here to do some additional leveling up in agility because their training grounds contained little else other than shooting targets. Rogues welcomed such visitors, and the reason was quite understandable. Often, this kind of neighborhood gave rise to hunter-rogue PK group formations. Destroying such a group single-handedly was almost impossible. There was just too much crowd control, poison, and additional force in the form of the hunter's pet. It was 3 against 1. The obstacle course was broken up into 5 parts, 100 meters each, and the task for each contender was to complete them all, one after another. Completing each of them granted titles that were seen as a mark of high honor among rogues, but were completely useless to other classes. At the time, after a long period of preparation, I was able to complete the first 100 meters on autopilot with my eyes closed. But that was the limit of my skills, and I didn't know any rogues that were able to complete the entire stretch. It was impossible to die on the course, since as soon as your hit points reached 1, you were teleported to the beginning with the length of the covered ground highlighted. 100 meters corresponded to the title Dodger, which was the first step in the rogue hierarchy.
"What did you forget here, you miserable bastard?"
The maladjusted player continued to have a laugh.
"Get back to summoning your spirits. There's nothing for you to do here."
"Lloyd Radumski?"
One of the NPC's rogue masters appeared next to me.
3 laps around the course, on the double."
"But why, master?"
4 laps, with 3 stone weights. Now."
"Yes, master."
Mumbling something under his breath, the player ran up to the wall that surrounded the Anhur's rogue training grounds, picked up 3 stones from the neat pile lying near the wall, and sped down the track. 4 laps equaled to almost 10 kilometers, with weights that gave you +3 to 5% towards agility and +2 to 4% towards stamina. Despite all his grumbling, it would do him good.
"How can I be of help to an elemental shaman?" said the master, stressing the last word, my class, and hinting that there was little for me to do here.
"I would like to go through the obstacle course." I tried to speak with a degree of pride, but my last words were drowned out in the laughter of the rogues and hunters. Suddenly an idea popped into my head. Why not put these snobs back in their place? That would be some joke. Who would expect a shaman to complete a course that rogues spend so much time trying to perfect? No one. This could play in my favor. I had no idea if I could pull it off or not, but I still remembered every move in the first 100 meters. I wasn't deterred by the fact that back then I was a hunter with maxed out agility. I knew all about rings and had the ability to change stats on them, too.
"Anyone is free to go through the obstacle course."
I was grateful to the NPC for not dropping even a hint of a smile when he heard my proposal.
"Shaman Mayan has never gone through this trial. I, the Master of Rogues, can confirm this. Give me a sign when you're ready."
"I'm ready," I grinned, as I watched the reaction of the players. They stopped doing their exercises, surrounded the strange shaman, without blocking the way to the obstacle course, and kept making pointed remarks about my sanity, or total lack thereof.
"I bet 500 gold that he won't get through even 20 meters.
Finally came a shout that I was eagerly expecting. Big-headed snobs shouldn't just be punished, but hit directly in the pocket. That's the only way they'll learn that putting people down randomly can result in unpleasant consequences.
"I'll take that up," I shouted. 500 for 20 meters. Anyone else?"
The place descended into chaos. I barely had time to sign the agreements that flashed before my eyes. First came the agreements for 30 meters, then for 50, and then even a handful for 90 meters, staking just over 3,000 gold each. As soon as the bombardment of agreements had ceased and the players started to exchange pleased glances, clearly thinking that they were about to clean up as a result of a seriously nutty shaman, I walked up to the start of the course and looked at the final total. 123 agreements, amounting to 52,000 gold. Not bad. Now, I just had to earn it. There were swirling cylinders and pendulums. Everything looked and worked the same as before. Let's see. I changed the bonus on my rings to agility, closed my eyes, and took the first step. The test had commenced. Jump forward, putting the weight straight on the knees. Immediately, roll left and jump up as a blade slashes under your feet. Two small steps ahead, head ducked, then stop for 2 seconds and make another 2 steps forward. Jump up, head still ducked, feel the air being sliced by blades just a centimeter away. Lie flat and make a sharp roll to the right. Then jump straight up and 5 quick steps forward. I suddenly felt that something wasn't going according to plan. I sensed a threat coming from the right. I soon lost track of time, so I couldn't say exactly how many meters I'd covered, but judging by the silence around me, only broken by the squeaking of the mechanisms, I've covered enough. The players were very quiet. That'll teach you to cross a shaman. All of this took just a moment to flash through my head as I forced my body to make an awkward movement to dodge a probable line of attack. As soon as I fell down, I got the feeling that I had to run from this spot. I rolled sideways, opened my eyes, and looked around. 112 meters. Having covered the stretch that I had learned by heart, now I was in unexplored territory. I didn't have a clue how to get through here, so what the players were expecting to happen from the very first moments of the trial finally happened. I was hit by a pendulum and flew out of the obstacle course. I came to myself by the start line. My life bar froze at one point, but soon began to slowly climb back up. Having a healthy amount of energy was helpful. Going through the obstacle course gained me +15 agility and +5 stamina. Although these weren't stats that a shaman would need, I'd find a way to make good use of them, too. I got to my feet and looked around. The silence of the players, who had just witnessed a miracle, was the best reward. Even better than the extra 200,000 gold I'd just earned. "That's quite something," finally uttered one of the rogues, and the crowd of players exploded with noise. As the enthusiastic buzz surrounded me, I began to be bombarded by messages, just as I had received agreements previously, that this or that amount had arrived to my account from some player or other. A minute later, I only had 5 outstanding agreements worth 3,000 gold each. "Some people still haven't paid up on their agreements." Without a moment's hesitation, I tried to outshout the crowd of players. My ear caught a rather interesting scrap of conversation.
"Are you sure you filmed everything? We have to put it up on the site today. No one will believe it unless they see it."
"I haven't paid up," came the voice that had taken a swipe at me at the very beginning. "I won't pay. You cheated."
"What?" Such an accusation made my jaw drop. "What cheating? What are you on about?"
"No one can cover that stretch on the first attempt. You trained especially in order to rip players off. You're a thief. I'll drag your ass through the courts. You'll be kicked out of Barleona for a trick like that. Hand over the money or I'll lodge a complaint against you with the heralds."
"Have you gone crazy, pretty boy?" I took a few deep breaths, trying to regain my cool, but wasn't exactly succeeding. The urge to punch this idiot in the face was so strong that I barely restrained myself. Players weren't permitted to attack each other in the city, but on the training grounds, fighting was allowed. As in the case of the obstacle course, a player couldn't be killed. Their life bar wouldn't fall below 1 point, while their attacker wouldn't be branded with the red PKer mark. This was the training grounds, after all. The money, now! The superhero was really screaming by this time, probably trying to use the volume of his voice to affect my decision. "I call upon a herald. I request your assistance." I uttered the summons phrase. The buzz in the grounds immediately died down, and camera pictograms appeared above the heads of the majority of players.
"You called me, and I came. If..."
"Please confirm that I have fulfilled all the necessary conditions of the agreement signed with these free citizens." I waved my hand around me, indicating the crowd, 5 members of which still owed me money. "Then please deduct any sums owed from their accounts, or, if they don't have it right now, from the coffers of the Empire. You can settle this matter with the indebted individuals yourselves afterwards." In Barleona, you always had to pay anything owed under an agreement. If the player didn't have enough money to fulfill his obligations, the corporation would come to his aid, paying the debt, and then proceeding to settle the matter with the debtor. I had no idea what it was they did, but I was sure they recouped their funds in full. The herald's eyes clouded over for a moment. He was probably looking through and analyzing logs. Then he said,
"Confirmed! All agreements signed with Mayen on completing the obstacle course must be honored without exception. He broke none of Barleona's laws. The funds to be paid under the agreements have been deducted from the accounts of the 5 free citizens in question and transferred to your account. The fine for refusal to fulfill their obligations, amounting to the size of the bet, has been deducted from the guilty parties and paid to the Empire. Is there anything else I can help you with?"
After thanking the herald for his help, I saw the messages concerning the remaining funds arriving in my account, and then headed back into Anhur's at a leisurely pace. The superhero was silent and followed me out with a very unfriendly stare. I realized that I'd gained yet another enemy. Well, to hell with him. I'm a shaman. Let him fear me. I've had enough of hiding and running away from every shadow. It's time for me to show some claws. As soon as I left the rogues, I knew where I should head next. I was familiar with the rogue and hunter training grounds and have visited them in the past, but there must be one for shamans as well, where one could meet those who have chosen this challenging class. Why not get together with others like me? After asking for directions from a squad of guards patrolling the city, I headed for the Anhur's shaman retreat. Like all training areas, the shaman training base was located close to the city wall. Externally, it didn't look any different from the others. A wall, a covered training hall, arched gates, everything was the same as with the other classes. When I walked under the arch, I beheld the inner layout of the grounds. 1 training dummy, same as the one Cornick set up for me, 1 dummy for mass spirit summoning, and a great deal of greenery. Grass, trees, bushes, and even a pond, which, although not green, was still a completely unexpected thing to find in a training area. Around 20 shamans were summoning spirits under the guidance of an NPC master. Another 2 or 3 dozen players were simply lying on the grass and chatting to each other. All they were missing was a basket of food to make this look like a real picnic. I think I like being a shaman more and more.
"Greetings, elemental brother."
A master appeared next to me.
"Have you come for knowledge, skills, expertise, or rest?"
Wow!
The full professional training package you're handed at every college, but with the offer of rest on top. This is no training course, but one big pleasure ride. It's knowledge I'm after, teacher, I bowed to the master. I'll hone my skills and expertise elsewhere, and I have no time to rest, so all that remains is knowledge. That's the thing I always seem to be lacking.
Come with me, brother.
The master wasn't in the least surprised by my choice as he pointed towards the training hall.
There is a library inside the hall, and that's where you have to go to obtain knowledge.
The library astonished me in the sense that it turned out to be a modest-sized room without any windows, covering no more than 10 square meters, and lit by 2 flickering candles. The room contained a table, and on it was the only book in the library. Next to it, a chair held a dozing NPC. The book was being closely studied by a girl whose name I couldn't immediately see in the room's subdued lighting. But when I did, I froze. Ants in the Pantsa, level 263 High Shaman. You could only level up to a Harbinger above that, and by the looks of it, she was expanding her knowledge in order to gain that rank.
"Listen, I need a couple more minutes with the book, all right?" said the girl in a rather hoarse voice. "It's a communal book, so we have to wait our turn to read it. I have to run in a minute anyway, so you'll have it soon enough."
"Yes, of course, I'll wait. By the way, thanks for your advice. Without it, I wouldn't have become an elemental shaman."
"Advice?"
The girl tore herself away from the book.
"I've never laid my eyes on you before."
"Wow. First kill at level 67? Impressive stuff. Nice flowers, too. Sea thistles, right?" "Yeah, sea thistles. About that advice, when I was going through the trial with the 4 rooms to pick my totem, your guidance on the in-game forum came in very handy. I still follow it often. Forget that you have a brain. Thinking is for mages. Shamans feel."
"And how did you do in the trial?"
The girl completely turned away from the book and stared at me. This was no special secret, so I told her how I got through all the 4 rooms and about being given the chance to choose my totem without saying whom I got in the end.
"Exactly the same for me," whispered the girl. "How did you know how to do it correctly? Where did you read it?"
"Nowhere. That's what I'm saying. I did it thanks to your advice. On the second attempt, that is, I followed the standard path the first time, as you will read in the forums."
"And whom did you get? The totem, I mean."
"I got the one I chose. While he's small, I don't really want to show him off too much. I'm sorry. I don't know yours either, for example. When he grows up a bit, I'll show him to you."
"That makes sense. As for my totem, I also wasn't given her, but chose her. I wanted a dragon at first, but I felt nothing towards him, so I chose her instead."
Silence descended on the room, and then someone else joined us. It was a black panther, 1.5 meters tall. Beautiful, graceful, sleek and shimmering in the candlelight, she seemed the very embodiment of strength and power.
"Hey there, beautiful."
The words involuntarily flew from my lips, and, surprising even myself, I went to the panther and put my hand on the back of her neck.
Yes.
The panther's fur was so pleasant to the touch that I closed my eyes in enjoyment and scratched her as I ran my fingers over her skin. Completely losing any sense of propriety, I put my other hand under the cat's head and started scratching her neck. A few seconds later, thunder-like purring echoed through the library.
"You're the 5th person to have earned the right to touch, Bussy," smiled Ants in the Pantsa. "She's a fussy girl and won't let just anyone near her."
After looking me in the eye, the panther dissipated right in my hands. The lady shaman had dismissed her.
So, what's your totem? You've seen mine now, so it wouldn't be right if you weren't to respond in kind.
Damn it. She's got me there. Should I try to wriggle out of it? What would be the point? As soon as I reach level 100, I'll